Go electric med Ford. Her får du rigtig meget elbil for pengene. Du kan nemlig spare helt op til 30.000 kroner på den populære Ford Explorer. Lang rækkevidde, fantastisk komfort og masser af udstyr. Fås for under 250.000 kroner. Besøg Ford og book en prøvetur i dag.
Aldrig AFK lever af dine donationer. På tier.dk kan du støtte med lige præcis det beløb, du har lyst til. Og hvis du gør det, så er du motherfucking nice. Hvis du har lyst til at se mere til mig, så er jeg live på twitch.tv/sjovenils et par gange om ugen. Der er allerede en del lyttere, der kigger med, og alle andre er mega meget velkomne. Du kan finde min streaming schedule på min egen Facebook-page, der bare hedder Nils Forsberg. Og nu, tilbage til underholdningen. So we were talking about the whole. You do strike me as somewhat of an Irish Ireland native.
Yes, I am from Dublin.
So what made you make the switch? Lorien is. Where's Lorien based again?
So the headquarters are in Belgium, but there is a studio in Dublin as well, where most of the writers are. So that's where I was working from.
That makes so much sense. It's a Belgian company. That's fine. I'm gonna jump right into this. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Never AFK, a podcast about gaming, this time in English, like you've heard before. Nothing new under the sun here, except that I have an extraordinary, excellent, good company here in the online studio. Very, very welcome, and thank you for joining me, Charlene Putney.
Hi, thank you, Nils.
Shout out to our mutual homie, Mikkel Lodahl, who made this whole thing, who made this connection. Because I was speaking with Mikkel, we went through the whole BioWare catalog, I guess. We're talking about how one company made like such an impact on computer role-playing games, with really story-driven Mass Effect in particular. I've been through everything.
And then I was more of a Dragon Age person myself.
Oh fuck, Dragon Age was so good. It was so good. It was so good. When I played Origins, I was like, so we spoke about role-playing games and how we enjoy video game companies who take stories seriously in role-playing games, right? I saw, this just reminds me of, maybe I'll introduce you before we get into this. Charlene Putney, you are a freelance video game writer.
That's it.
And video game writing teacher.
Yep.
You teach here in Denmark, right?
Yes, I do.
At the.
So I teach some of the master students at the Danish Film School. I've taught some workshops at KADK. Mm-hmm. Also in ITU, I go and do a little writing workshop there.
Yeah.
Master students at the start of the year, and I also did a little workshop over at Aalborg University.
Yeah.
For their VizArts.
Does the film school have a video game branch now?
So they have a thing called DADIU program, which is a collaboration between various different types of media students who work together to make games. So some of the like the film directors work as game directors for games as well.
Mm. And then you have, earlier when you worked with Larian, you have been deeply involved in Divinity Original Sin and Divinity Original Sin 2.
So I came on board with Larian at the start of 2015. So basically they had already made Divinity Original Sin then. And when I came on board, it was to write the all of the kind of combat barks and inventory item descriptions for the enhanced edition. So I spent a few weeks writing a 3,000 line spreadsheet with 10 different variations on every combat bark. Great fun. And from that, I was hired as a full employee at Larian. And then from there, I worked on the very beginning on Divinity Original Sin, working on our story, situations, characters, dialogues,
the whole
nine yards from start to finish.
Because
as part of a team, I was not the one. I was one of seven.
Yeah. And you have been working on Baldur's Gate 3.
So I worked on Baldur's Gate 3 for about 2 years before I left Larian and came here to Copenhagen. So basically working on the core story and character.
Oh, I'm getting goosebumps already. Because like Baldur's Gate, well, like you can't, in my mind, you can't talk about video game writing without mentioning Baldur's Gate.
I mean, that was my favorite game for years. So it was extremely exciting to get to work on the next
and also
level of that.
There was the reason I say this is that Baldur's Gate was, in my mind, the first game to really take the role-playing game genre seriously. As a role player, in the way of sitting in the basement with your lads rolling dice.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was the most mainstream of all of the of Dungeons and Dragons style games.
But also, we did a Baldur's Gate episode, and in my research for that, I discovered that the original Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 had a quite unique story, the making of them, because they were envisioned by mostly medical doctors and their friends. I don't know if they came to the company or the company came to them, some chicken and the egg thing there, but there's definitely it was the first game to start with the vision instead of starting with what is technically available. So these role players who had no idea how to make a video game just said to the programmers, all right, we need this. We need to cast spells and it needs to look like this, and you need to work, we need to see the entire party and we need to be able to interact with. There must have been some programmers fucking pulling their hair like, this hasn't been made before.
Yeah.
So let's start there with you. How do you approach, like, you, if Baldur's Gate was also your favorite game, then you know, like, you're touching the Holy Grail here, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you're, how do you start writing a Baldur's Gate 3 with everything you know, the expectations of the community, the legacy of the originals? How do you
approach that? To be honest, I can't really talk very much about that because the game isn't out now and there's too much going on, so I can't really talk too much about Baldur's Gate 3, to be honest.
God damn it. But of course. I forgive you. I hate you, but I forgive you. So let's delve into... All right, well, let's start with... you came into Divinity Original Sin, which had a very, very positive response from the community, and then you went on to build the Divinity Original Sin 2 right from the bottom. How did you approach that then? Again, like the same vibe with you know, the community have expectations, you like kind of delve into something that many people will find bracket sacred. It's like when you write a new Star Wars movie, like, you know, there's some you know you're going to be scrutinized, I guess.
I mean, I guess I didn't come into the company with that kind of a fear because, like, I was one of a team of people who were working. Yeah. And so Sven Vinska, the leader of the company, who's like the CEO, but he's also the creative director, and he has a very strong vision for how he wants everything to be. And then, of course, the same lead writer was there from Original Sin to Original Sin 2.
Mm.
So I never felt like I was coming in and trying to like catch up to something that was different. Like, I knew from very, very, very specifically full time like what our tone was, how things should feel, what our sense of humor is, how we work together, how we collaborate. And that, like, what we do is we would start with like getting a nice theme for the story together, and then extrapolating out on that to build a solid core story.
Now,
so,
I
yeah.
loved Divinity Original Sin 2, 2 in particular.
Oh, cool. I'm happy.
And for those, some of you listeners haven't played the game, it's a classic isometric top-down party-based RPG. But instead of like, there are how many are there? 6
companions.
Yeah, well, like you choose
yeah.
from
origins. Yeah, there's 6 origins.
6 origins, exactly. Mm-hmm. So in so you kind of choose the who is going to be the main character of the story.
You can also make your own if you want.
You can also make your own, yeah. Okay. But I guess in your mind or in your work, the question I'm trying to get at is normally in an RPG you have one player character. If we take The Witcher 3, right? You have Geralt. He needs to go through a series of quests and challenges and all that. In Divinity Original Sin 2, you have 6 different origin stories that then will need to integrate with the story in 6 different ways. They have different gods that say different things. They have different the environment reacts to them in different ways. They have different combat mechanics. How do you approach that as a writer, where you have to like find the common denominator, but still make it like a replayable experience if you choose another character?
So, I mean, the very first thing that we did, like we spent months writing the main core story, just like the backbone, the spine, everything else hinges upon. Then once we had a feeling that we liked the way the core story was going and liked the underlying themes and the factions and the areas that we were having things played in, then we started to bring in the idea of these origin stories and figuring out real personalities, like real human beings who live in this world, how they would interact with this particular storyline and what kind of different interesting situations might happen that would play out differently with different people. So we each took a character. So my origin character is Ifan Benmezd, the mercenary lone wolf. And so I wrote all of his lines and I wrote his story. And I mean, obviously other people gave a lot of feedback and help and everything like that. We did extremely collaborative work at Larry, and there's nothing that is one person owns completely in there at all. But the way that we worked then was like creating a character, figuring out all of the little touch points that they would have into the main story, then figuring out the touch points that they would have with each other, so that you can build like relationships, like the romance system, kind of attitudes of everything, like that comes from there.
Because a thing I really really enjoyed with the, which is kind of a medium line between gameplay mechanics and story, is that in other, like, say, Baldur's Gate or Dragon Age Origins, you pick your party both among which characters do I like, who are funny, who are immersive, who do I want to hang out with, as well as the fightiness. Like, okay, I'm going to need a healer, so I bring this dude. Not because he's interesting, but because he's a healer, and I, you know, you need a healer, right?
Hmm?
But the thing in Divinity Original Sin 2 is that every character is like a bland vanilla, can become anything. So you can really dig into the whole personality aspect of choosing your companions and then just go, okay, Ifan, you're an archer because I need an archer. And he'll go, perfect, I'm a decent archer. And then you can roll from there. This doesn't lead to a question. I just wanted to say that I really enjoyed that, and it gave it gave the game a lot of replayability as well.
I think so, and I enjoyed it a lot too. And I think it does give you a lot more options for like figuring out to see what you like and to play around. Like my boyfriend did not play the game for a long time, but now since we've been in lockdown at the start of that, he became he kind of had to give it a go because. There wasn't much else to do.
Yeah, he can't use the excuse. No, sorry, honey, I can't find the time anymore.
Exactly. So he was playing, and so I was kind of watching him play a lot and, like, noticing how the idea of just, like, playing around and going, oh, actually, this person might be an interesting polymorph, or, oh, actually, I really want to have some more pyromancy, so I'm going to give this person some more points in that, and then changing it all around with the magic mirror on board the Lady Vengeance, so that you can actually, you know, really mix it up, really change it around and figure out what your play style is. And I love watching, like, watching people on YouTube, the interesting ways that they bring up the combinations, just very interesting ways of doing combat.
Yeah. That's also the it makes every combat feel important in some way. Like, I love the lateral thinking aspect that you can, but wait a minute, what if I teleport the guy into lava? Or what if I, like, there's so many options and so many ways of dealing with it. But speaking with you specifically, I'd love to delve some deeper into the whole writing aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Did you start out as a novelist, as a more straightforward writer?
So, I mean, I kind of have a strange history of work. So I actually, in university, I did ancient languages, a master's degree in four ancient languages. And then from there, I got a job. I worked in Google.
You got a job?
I know, right?
You majored in ancient languages and you got a job?
No, it's like my biggest accomplishment. My guidance counselor couldn't believe it. I got a job in Google. I worked as a manager in Google for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I worked in Facebook as a manager for a number of years, where I was helping make the site work in right to left languages, the ones that I studied. And I loved writing all the time. I got really tired of the tech world and politics and things that seem, people make things seem so important in the tech world, and it never really seemed that important.
Did you at any point tire of working for the bad guys?
Well, the thing is, when I worked for them, they weren't the bad guys.
That's way back then.
It is way back then. I'm very old.
I have a friend of mine who pays attention to stuff, and she told me a couple of months ago that it's like 4 years ago, maybe it's a couple of years ago, where Google removed their do no evil sentence from their business charter.
Yeah, but I mean, when I worked there in 2004, Google, right?
So that's while they were still cool. And
16 years ago, I joined Google. Oh, and like when Larry Page personally hired every person on the team, there was like, I think it was less than 1,000 employees in the whole company. So it was a very different world.
Yeah.
And Facebook also was very small when I was there. But I basically left because I wanted to write a fantasy novel.
Yeah.
And I had some stock money from working at Facebook. We had just done the IPO, so I had a little bit of cash enough to live a year without making money. So I said, okay, I'm going to take 3 months, write this fantasy novel, and then I'll get another job somewhere else. And it didn't really work out like that. and I realized kind of quickly that I'm not going to make money by writing a fantasy novel.
Yes.
And at the same time, I started to get really interested in making interactive fiction. But Twine wasn't really a very well-known thing then. I don't know if you know about Twine. It's a free tool.
It's a game?
No, it's a free tool for making interactive fiction. So it's a very, very easy to use tools that people can use to make their own games. Like people who don't know how to do any programming at all can make text-based hypertext games.
That sounds really cool.
It's really cool. So it was extremely cool in the year 2012 when I got into it. and it hasn't changed very much since then. So I started running little game jams around London where I lived, teaching people how to use Twine. And from there, got some little jobs doing small game writing gigs. Then one day, I actually was just on Twitter, and I saw a tweet from Sven, the leader of Larian, saying, I need somebody who can write nonlinear narrative beats I want to talk to them at GDC. I was going to go to GDC, and I just, somehow that day, I had a lot of courage. I don't have courage every day, but that day I did. I just wrote back and said, hey, I can do it. He said, okay, prove it. Send me a portfolio. I sent him a portfolio, and from that, got to come in and work as a contractor on those, that giant spreadsheet of combat barks and infantry items. Then I did a good enough job on that they said, hey, okay, please come join the team and work on the story from the ground up for the next game. So it's really a kind of a meandering path, you know? I love when I go to ITU, for example, or KDK or the film school here, and I see the kind of young people in their early 20s are setting out, and they know exactly what they want to do, and they have the exact idea of like how they're going to get there and what kind of games they're going to make and how they're going to do it. I don't know, it's really invigorating to me because I've never known what I wanted to do. I just did whatever I wanted to do at the time and figured it out along the way. And like, yeah. I mean, who knows, what will I do in 5 years? I have more. I'll be a yoga teacher full time. Let's find out.
Oh, Charlene also teaches yoga. Yeah.
Yes, actually I do a free class every Tuesday evening. Yeah. So if anyone who's listening has any interest in doing like very, very, very chill, no experience needed, no equipment needed, you don't need any fancy clothes, anything at all. If you want, it's from 7 to 8 Copenhagen time. It's very chill and it's free, completely free. So if anyone wants to join.
Online?
Yeah, over Zoom.
Oh, cool. All right.
Yeah,
well,
if you just send me an email.
Yeah.
Charlene.putney@gmail.com.
Come
just
again?
Send me an email.
Get the email.
Charlene.putney@gmail.com. Send me an email. I will be happy to put you on the list and join us.
Charlene.putney@gmail.com.
That's me.
Cool. And I will give you plenty of time to plug anything you want in the end.
That's all I got. my free yoga classes.
Give you a reply.
Is it?
Well, speaking of things that's not going to earn you any money.
See, I keep doing that, don't I? Languages, writing, yoga.
Oh, yeah.
Gift.
So what I was, the question I was trying to say is, so you started the fantasy novel, the whole linear thing. How was it to make the switch from linear writing to what's alinear, asymmetrical? What's the other word?
Non-linear narrative.
Non-linear writing, yeah.
Actually, it was amazing. It's the best thing ever because the worst part about writing my novel, in fact, like I have finished the draft of my novel several times. I always have these other versions of it sitting inside of my documents because I could never decide exactly what happened in a lot of cases. And I keep all the different versions of what was going to happen. So realizing that I could just make
scenarios.
So it's going to become a
choose your own adventure type thing.
No, maybe it will. Maybe I will actually get around to doing that someday. Maybe I'll just put it in twine. Just suddenly being able to create situations where anything can happen, and often does, and like to be able to make serious things happen, funny things happen, ridiculous things happen, depending on the mood that the person playing is in, depending on like what kind of branches they feel like going in.
Mm-hmm.
It was fantastic. And the other amazing thing about writing for games rather than novel by myself at home on my own, tearing the walls, is getting to work with other people.
Yeah.
So, like when we wrote the core story for Original Sin 2, 7 of us writers, and we worked in Google Docs, and we wrote massive Google Docs, and the whole time we'd be commenting on each other's writing, suggesting different ways things could go, suggesting different wording, sometimes just writing over what the other ones were writing. Mm. We were all in the same document at the same time, just like little hamsters. just like feverishly working away and making this document together, like a child of our minds, of like the 7 of us. And it was so great that when I, after a few months of that, when I had been just so into it, I hadn't done any work on my own writing. Back to try and do my own writing again. And I was just sitting there by myself in this empty Google Doc. Wait, there's something missing. Wait, what? How am I supposed to do this on my own? What? And I like writing with the team.
Well, I really enjoy like jamming with other, you know, I do stand-up. And I think in my mind, it's always easier when you have someone to play with. I also believe that the true severing line between whether or not you're a professional writer slash comedian slash artist, whatever in any way, is are you capable of doing it on your own? Because at some point in your career, you're just gonna be asked to do that.
I think okay. So I actually have a converse to that because yeah. I think, okay, of course, I can do it on my own. I do it on my own all the time. I do plenty of writing on my own.
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody that I've worked with, like, is a solid and good writer, also do it on their own. I think the actual, for me, the mark more of being a professional is when you do it with others. Because one of the things that I find, especially with a lot of like aspiring writers, is that they don't take criticism. They take it like as a criticism of themselves as a human being. But then this particular type of writing does not work for this particular thing that we're trying to do right now.
Yeah.
And I think that like you have to let your ego go so far away from what you're doing when you're working as a team. And so yeah, I think everyone can do it on their own. If you can't play well with others, but it's going to be very hard to be a game writer.
Yeah, I think it actually turns upon some of the thing is you have to be able to kill your darlings.
But also you have to be able to watch other people kill your darlings and torture them in front of your eyes.
True.
That's a whole different matter.
Yeah.
You're not making the choice yourself.
Yeah, true. That's very true. So can we delve some more into this, the differences between writing linear and non-linear?
Sure. What do you want?
Well, you're the video game writing teacher. Are there any common misconceptions that you, like, on the first day of the students, you're like, all right, everybody, apart from you're not going to make a plan that's gonna go as planned?
I actually usually show this to my students now on the first day because it happened a good few times. About 4 years ago when I was teaching one of my master's classes, interactive theory. Like they were just getting started. They were doing their very first Twine game. So just so people who maybe don't know what Twine is, it's basically like a node-based system. So you can create very, very simply interactions, like little text games where you start and then can go in various ways.
It's a choose your own adventure.
The choose your own adventure, yeah, but yeah. I think we're not allowed to use those words for legal reasons anymore.
Well, no one, important listens to this podcast anyway. And the important ones who do are not going to sue me. Go on ahead.
So, at the very, very start, they would say, okay, we're just going to play. We're just going to give it a go. So let's start off our first story. And go from nothing. So I wouldn't give them a prompt. I wouldn't give them anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And out of the 40 students that I had in that class, 12 of them started with a choice of you wake up in the morning. And then the choice was get up or hit the snooze button.
Mm.
And so this seems to be just where people's brains go when they start to think, what's an interesting story? What's a choice that people can make that's interesting?
Yeah.
And like, this is a terrible choice because it's just a loop, right? It's like if you choose to hit the snooze button, next choice is going to be the exact same choice. And on and on and on and on, and nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the segue into what I usually do in my first class is like, you need to make interesting choices, meaningful choices that get players actually have some sort of like investment and feeling of connection with what's going on.
Mm.
The way that you do, like, you know, we do a bunch of different exercises. There's a bunch of different ways of making choices interesting, like physicality. You can do internal conflicts. You can do all kinds of things. But then I get to do them to do favorite exercise, which is called the 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
Just like trying to think of a choice that when presented with this choice, two options, two binary options, 50% of people will choose one side, 50% will choose the other. And so illustrate it with an example, and then get them to try and do ones and make the class do it. And it's really hard. Like, it's very difficult to make choices that 50% of people will choose one or the other. But when you do something that's close to that, even if you can make a choice that's like 30-70, those are the kind of choices that people get really stressed about. Like, you might remember when you're playing Dragon Age, spoilers, but the end of the first Dragon Age, it is like, be what, 12 years old now, so I think we're okay to talk about it, right? Okay, so at the end of the first Dragon Age, when you have that choice between like Alistair and Morrigan, whether you're going to like give up Alistair to do the thing or you're going to go with Morrigan, and like I remember just putting down the controller and like walking out of the room and going,
like, I can't make this call.
I can't decide. It still haunts me. Like, it still haunts me to this day. And I think that that's the kind of choices you want to give players, is stuff that they have to call their friends on the phone and say, what did you do with this? Like, oh, I don't want to fuck up my whole playthrough, et cetera, et cetera. And so you got to get those ones that make people stressed. They don't know what to choose.
Yeah.
That's the start. That's my first lecture right there for you.
Well, that's a good start. And then I'm really curious like to get some more like some inside information on how this actually works, like just hearing that you work seven people in one Google Sheet for months and months and months. is
intense.
yeah. So what was the, how much prompt were you given? Like, was there, what the creative director, I guess, was he also one of the writers, or did you have to like envision another person's make another person's fantasies come true, or did you have like the head start? Again, there's if, I guess in every game development, there's also a chicken and the egg thing between mechanics and story, or universe, or more, I think, programmers and writers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you start with, we want this story to happen, programmers make it happen, or programmers say, we have this new cool piece of technology or game mechanic or whatever, make this into a story?
So I would say it's neither of those things, because it's a lot more collaborative than that in practice. But in general, from how it worked on Original Sin 2, like, our creative director is extremely involved. Like, he wasn't actually writing lines himself, but he was completely involved in like the creation of the story from the very, very start. Like, he's a genius. And he's also extremely involved in what the programmers were doing and the artists and the sound. Like, I don't know how he does it all, but the way that we would work it is we were making the core story. At the same time, like, the game designers, the level designers, just kind of fleshing out areas. The programmers were making up skills based on the kind of ideas that we were having for characters. It was just constantly overlapping back and forth. And we worked on Slack, so it was a huge amount of communication. I've never worked anywhere that had so much. Working in Facebook and Google, we didn't.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you worked in Facebook and Google, which are basically...
Didn't have anything like the level of we had in Larian. I knew what everyone was doing all the time. I knew everything new that was happening. Everybody knew what everyone was doing every day. And I'm sure it's not quite like that anymore, because I think there's like people in the studio now. But when I was there, there was of us, I think, at the time, so it was much easier to just know what everyone was up to.
Yeah, your mic is dropping out a little once in a while. How many were there working?
There was about 50 of us, I think, when I
started. Yep.
So I think it's like you say, it's a chicken and egg thing, but it was never like we tell people what to do or anyone tells us what to do. Like, it's very collaborative. It all kind of happens organically and extremely iterative. We'd have whole storyline segments that would like that we would decide after a while weren't working, weren't fun enough, and just let them go.
Yeah,
and kill them. Now, the Ithan story, even, for example,
Without delving into any specific game details, could you tell us maybe a little bit about which experiences and teachings did you bring with you from Divinity Original Sin 2 into the nuts and bolts of Baldur's Gate 3?
Oh, I can't really tell you anything about that.
No. But you know how fucking curious I am, and I'm going to prod you, and you say no, and that's cool, and we still love you.
You get it, but it's really very important to me
that I don't
say anything about it, and that everything is maintained I'm not gonna
poke anymore. Please excuse me for my curiosity. I am very, very hyped.
Me too. I can't wait to play it.
Mm. So back to Larian Studios then. Did you feel a difference between working when you worked in Google and Facebook? Did you work in the States?
No, I worked in Dublin, European headquarters of both the Marathon.
Mm. Well, then I would like to ask you, now you're working on a game with some friends of yours. It's a game about squirrels. It's called Nuts. Now, you have been involved in some of the most story-heavy computer games released in the last many, many years. How does the work differ from writing a game about squirrels that's called Nuts? How do you approach that as a writer? What's the writing job? Do you just write, or what squirrels say? Do the squirrels talk in this game?
No, the squirrels do not. So the game is basically a kind of surveillance game. So the kind of story is that you're a research assistant and you head out into a forest called Melmoth Forest.
Mm-hmm.
You are basically there to track squirrels. You're basically going out every evening with your camera and you're tracking the squirrels. You want to see how it looks so that you can see lots of it, like nuts.game. It's got a really cool art style by Paul Clarissou. And you're surveilling squirrels, but something's weird, something's strange, and there's something that's just not right going on there. And your role in the game is to figure out what's going on. So in this game, what I'm doing is writing the overall story, mm-hmm. And then writing the voiceover dialogues for what you're hearing while you're talking on the phone to your boss back at the institute. And all the written content.
Ah.
To be honest, it doesn't differ that much, except that the Google Docs are a lot smaller. there's less people commenting on what I'm doing.
Yeah. But
it's much the same. It's the same kind of thing. It's figuring out, okay, what do we want to tell? How do we want to tell it? And how do we want people to feel when we've done the telling?
Yeah.
So in each case, the same kind of principles apply.
Oh, I like those three. Can we have those three again? That's like a rule starting
with. I don't know, what did I say?
What do we want to tell?
Yeah, we want to tell it, and then how we want people.
How do we want to tell it, and what do we want people to feel when we tell it? That makes a lot of sense. Does every game have a writer?
No.
That's what I was thinking. Because the same second you say. A game about squirrels and nuts. Have you tried the VR game called Acorn?
No, I have not.
It's Acorn spelled wrongly, right?
Okay, I will have a look at that.
It's a multiplayer game where the person holding the VR set is a tree, and then all your friends download the app onto your phone, and then all your friends play little squirrels who have to steal the acorns from the tree.
Oh my god, I'm going to have to share this with the team. This is the kind of thing they will love. It's four of us, so yeah.
It's perfect if there's four of you. That's three squirrels and one tree. It's absolutely glorious good fun.
It's fantastic.
And that is a hilariously funny game, but I don't expect that they've had a team of 50 writers working in Google Docs.
I mean, I think there's a lot of games that don't have writers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's funny the thing you started saying about working about the combat banter and the shouts and like that. It reminds me of I forget his name now. That's annoying. Patton Oswalt, the stand-up comedian. He has a long bit about how comedians get hired into Hollywood to make movies fun that aren't funny. So they get hired to, because, and like the whole movie's been shot and it's all done, and then they look at it and go, it's not funny enough. So they'll hire comedians to write things that can be shouted into the scene from off camera. Which I like, at least bring them along for the, like, bring them in earlier.
Oh, I didn't know about this. This is a, that is a very verbal practice.
Patton Oswalt has a long bit about it. It's maybe from the Werewolves and Lollipops CD, if anybody wants to check it out. But it seems like when I'm talking to you that you have been very fortunate with the environment you've worked in, like the collaboration, the cooperation, the 'cause you also hear many stories about crunch times and people in the game development industry who aren't like super chill with the way they treat their employees.
Yeah. I think there is an awful lot of super unchill places to be in the industry. Yeah.
Yeah, but you can vouch for Lorien as a cool place.
Yes,
to be.
It's a great place.
And
fantastic
again, well,
place.
let's take a moment here to shout out to Lorien then, because a thing I really enjoy in this podcast is, of course, we talk about the people who make us upset, right? But I also like to take time to give shout-outs to video game companies who do good. And fucking, like, Divinity, when you play Divinity Original Sin 2, I'm going to talk mostly about number 2 because that's what I sunk the most of hours into, you really feel that you're being taken serious as a gamer. I've experienced if few to zero crashes. There's so many interactable objects, so many different ways of creative ways of approaching the game, and I just wanted to take some time to say good job, boys, keep at it. And if they manage to do that at the same time as having a like positive work environment,
I mean, everybody there is a person. It's a huge thing.
I can imagine so. So, do you have any advice for, let's say you're out there and you're an aspiring writer and you want to get into video game writing? What's the ABCs?
So, I mean, the only thing that you really need to be a video game writer, two things. One is that you need to be a good writer already. And so doing lots of writing exercises and getting lots of feedback on your existing work is good there. And secondly, you need to be able to prove that you understand to make interesting and meaningful choices, and that you can work inside some kind of because as a writer in a video game company, sitting in a paneled library with your fountain pen off into the middle distance, you're really working inside the engine, working with people and collaborating with people all the time. So you have to be able to show those things. And it's hard to show those things without like experience in this, but it's not impossible because you can make yourself, you can make a small game in Twine. So you can just go to twinery.org. It's completely free. Spend a bit of time learning that and make a game in that. Make a text-based game that shows that you have that. You could also use Inkle. So a lot of big companies now are using Inkle Writer as the tool that they use for writing. So if you can show that you can use Inkle Writer, that's a small bit of coding also. So that's also a bonus. you can make, if you're interested in a very specific company, you might like to try and make a mod using their tool. So like you could make a mod of Original Sin 2, for example, in the Larian editor, and show that you understand that. I actually have on my blog, on my website, I have a whole article with lots of links, if anyone's interested.
Ah, you did have something else to plug, didn't you?
Well, I'd be happy if you just emailed them. I'm not plugging it. I'm really not. Just since it happens to be what you're asking me, if people would like to check it out, it's there. It's alphashar.com. Mm-hmm. It's under the work section. It's a very long article that was from Haber, the Russian website. Asked me to do that when I was around a few years ago. Still got all the valid advice there and the same advice I give my students as well.
Now, speaking to you for some time now, it seems that one of the recurring concepts you keep returning to as core is the idea of choices.
Absolutely.
I guess that mostly affects role-playing games, where the choices you make are very, very central to like the development of the story. Of course, there are many other games where maybe the having a choice, like say Call of Duty, would have writers writing the dialogue and the story and all of that, but that will probably be more linear without so many like defining choices, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, well, let's just delve into that a bit. Is it cooler to be a writer if you're writing role-playing?
Yes.
Why?
Yes. Because you have so much more efficiency in the work that you're making and so much more ability to shape things that are going on. Mm. So much more space to put yourself into the work. So one of the things in Original Sin 2 that we all had, like with our origin stories and with small characters, like even with little rats and ghouls and stuff. Yeah, stuff from...
Oh, that just... Right now, as we're speaking, there's a talent in Divinity Original Sin 2, if you haven't played, called Pet Pal, exactly. Which makes you able to talk to animals. And every single fucking rat in a dungeon, squirrel in a forest, every dog in the city, every cat in a back alley has a dialogue attached to it that you can only access by picking the Pet Pal thing. Like, it just blew my mind right now, the sheer amount of workload added into the making of that game that many players probably will never even see.
Most everyone knows that,
Yeah. And there's a little thing saying it in like a screensaver tip or... But the thing is, Pet Pal doesn't give you any... Like, some of the other talents will give you in-combat bonuses to make you kill people or whatever. Which is important in a role-playing game. I like big numbers.
But if you can't, if you don't have Pet Pal, and you don't get to talk to the eagle in the graveyard, and then you'll never get the summon eagle skill.
Ah, there's a fun... See, I didn't even know that.
Oh. Yeah, but as I was saying, everything that we... All the little stories like that. Like, for example, the eagle in the graveyard. Mm. We made all those stories based on little things in our lives. Like, so things that were bothering us, like instances that were happening to us in our lives, like things that we thought were important. And when you are writing a big role-playing game, so many different characters, so many situations that need to be filled with content, you have so much more space to put yourself and the things that you're interested in to the game.
Yeah.
So, for me, that's much more interesting than someone telling me that I would need to just, you know, I don't know,
soldier
five different ways
soldier
this soldier
four.
Is going to tell you that you're dead.
Yeah. You can only say charge in so many different ways, right?
Yeah, I mean, and that's also a fun, it's that's a fun challenge. Like, I enjoy doing cut barks as well, but I would prefer to write for things that have a lot of different meanings going on and choices and little moments that teach people about themselves and their attitudes to the world and their perspectives. So
No,
that's
yeah.
more my vibe.
How do you do that? Make, because that's when gaming becomes really interesting, is when it transcends the universe and actually, I've had a long did a long episode about Life is Strange, and how that can actually teach you valuable life skills within ethics and morality. Yeah, I don't know where I'm going with this. It just sounds really cool. Like I love that games are so developed now that the developers and writers will take it upon them the challenge of like actually creating something meaningful.
I mean, I think that that's something that every artist wants to do with their work. It
Yes.
is and their the way that they see the world and a way that maybe helps other people who see the world in the same way, or to perhaps challenge people into going, well, what, how do you see the world? What do you think is right? Come across a wounded soldier, what is the right thing to do? Is it
Yeah.
right to kill him because he's in so much pain and he's going to die anyway, or is it the right thing to, watch him suffer?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like these kind of there's so many questions like that. Gaming can like. Into people's faces and make them actually consider what they think the world
Yeah.
works and how they think the world should work.
I'm thinking about the guy outside of Megaton in Fallout 3. Like one of the first guys you meet, you're straight out of the vault, you haven't got much water, and you meet a guy and he's basically thirsting to death. So do you give the guy water? Because he's gonna die if you don't, but you don't have much water. So that like first very, very, very simple little dilemma actually will form the baseline of how your character interacts with the wasteland. Right? Do you help people? Do you help build community? Do you share your resources, or do you think about yourself first in this harsh reality where half the things are trying to kill you and the other half is trying to screw you over, right?
Exactly. And I think that like those things do not just in games. Like, the way that you approach these kind of things, games can also tell you something about who you are out in the real world. People don't usually like to hear that, but that's a way that I think is that's the way I think of looking at it. Can
Well, I have a tendency
trust
to
me to write.
when I play role-playing games, I have a tendency to if I like the game and I'm thinking this is worth of a replay, I'll play the first playthrough as a good guy and the second playthrough as a horrible guy. Just to explore. Like when you again at spoiler alert here, we're talking about old games here. Do you blow up Megaton? That is like that's one of the most bad guy moments I've felt in games. Oh, and not to mention the what was it? I think it was Knights of the Old Republic 2, where you play if you play as a dark side, you can really make some bad shit happen. Like you can make one of your followers kill their best friend and force mind fuck them.
I mean, and like, I think that there is super interesting things you can, like, for example, I love the Elder Scrolls games
Yeah.
so much. I never finish the main storyline. I just play through all of the like Thieves Guild quests, all
Yes.
of the like kind of Kamara quests, all the assassin type things, everything
Dark
like that. I
Brotherhood.
will do. Those are my favorite parts of those games. But then I like I say, well, why do I like to do that? Why is it that I want to stalk through this house and pick off all of the people at this party one by one without them knowing? Interesting. What is it about the real world? Like, what is it game
Well,
that makes this an interesting thing to do for me? I think
I
these are
just,
interesting questions, and
well,
I
I,
think
yeah, to answer, I don't know if I answer it, but in my mind, I'm just very explorative. Like I'm a LARPer, and I played a ton of pen and paper role playing games as well. And the one of the liberties that gaming and LARPing and role playing games give you is that you get to safely explore sides of yourself that you might not want to bring into your everyday life. Right? I've played a homosexual. I've played a racist. I've played a stupid, fucking arrogant shithead. Right? Not to label gay people with shitheads and racists, but like just things that aren't inherently in my day-to-day life. I feel like it really piques my curiosity that I can like do that in a safe environment.
think I agree with what you're saying there, and that's the same I think I have, but I think on that it's interesting to look at the things that you like to explore in games, figure out what it is about them. I realized I love secrets. I love knowing things other people don't.
There we go.
Like being part of this little secret community in the Elder Scrolls that other people aren't. Like, that's the kind of thing. I think, okay, that's interesting. That's an interesting thing. Yeah, that's all. I'm not saying if you kill people in a video game, kill people in real life. I'm just saying, look at the interesting things that might be a correlation to the real world.
Well, that's a look at the interesting things that might be a correlation to the real world. Well, that's not a bad bombshell to end on. We have been speaking for almost an hour now.
Okay.
Yeah, I know time flies. That's a good
Sure does.
that's a good indication. That means this will be a good episode. If time flies, it means we've been having fun. It makes it more worthwhile to listen to. I don't. I'm not gonna like twist your arm and make us. Stop right here and right now, but right here and right now might be a good time to like take a step back. Can we, what have we learned while we spoke? Can we summarize, tie a bow on the whole thing?
Know. Everyone should make a twine game.
Everyone should make a twine game. That's a good start. Like,
My partner is about to do a Skype call, so we should probably finish up because otherwise.
Well, that is amazing timing. Charlene Putney, thank you so much for joining me here. It's been an absolute treat. And I can't wait to play your new game like the rest of the world. And
Yeah, like me.
exactly.
I haven't worked
And
on it for over a year, so
thank you
I'll
so
wait.
much for all the time and effort you and the rest of the team put into Divinity Original Sin 1 and 2.
Super glad you
It's
enjoyed it.
given me and a lot of other people a lot of very, 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 very entertaining hours. Is there anything you would like to plug here at the end? Your mail is charlene.putney@gmail.com if
And
people
that's
want to get in touch.
charlene.putney. And yeah, if people want to get in touch, go ahead. If you want to go to my yoga class on Tuesday evenings, that's my favorite thing in the week right now. So I'm very happy to be able to offer it.
Fantastic. I'll just finish up real quick in Danish and let you off your way so your partner can do his thing. Tusind tak for at lytte med, kære venner. Nu siger jeg det her hurtigt, så vi kan få det overstået. Smash the like button, Facebook, ris, ros, skriv til mig. Motherload.dk, download noget stand-up. Og husk at lytte med næste gang, når vi en gang til er aldrig AFK. Tak til jer, der støtter os på Tier.
Nogen trænger til briller, nogen har gavn af en fysioterapeut, og andre kunne have glæde af en diætist. Er du medlem af Sygeforsikringen Danmark, så har vi din ryg med tilskud til en lang række behandlinger. Også til tandlæge, vaccinationer, privatjordmor, receptpligtig medicin, psykolog og meget mere. Meld dig ind, mens du er rask på sygeforsikring.dk.